It is Monday, the 10th of November, and this is episode 228 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. Chris in the host seat and Ian in the expert seat. Hello, Ian.
No, not the expert. And good evening, Christopher, the best goddamn host that the UK has ever seen.
You could say the best UK host that the UK's never heard. That's all right.
No, lots of people have heard you.
You'll be very glad to hear that my Mac experience has improved greatly since I inserted your memory modules. It's been going quite delightfully.
Good. That's my top tip for Macs. Throw RAM at it.
Yeah. I remember when I bought it, I always planned on throwing RAM at it. You know, I just didn't want to pay Apple tax and I thought I'd just go and grab some things. And actually it turned out to be really cheap because 3 years later I got some for free.
But yeah. Basically moan long enough and I'll look in a drawer and find something.
So yeah, it was awesome. So now everything's things that weren't working before, like Evernote, the app, and things like Spotify, which are just pain in the ass, turn out to be quite good once you put memory inside. There you go. Let's crack on with some news then. So let's kick off with it's quite an old because we're a little bit late in recording this week. This story is quite old, but we thought we'd still cover it. And that's Robert Hannigan of the GCHQ, who's just taken up his role basically as director there. And he's come out in strong with strong words, basically telling Google and other network operators that effectively they are funding and supporting terrorism.
Yes.
Wow.
And basically what he's saying is, like, you've made it really hard now to get this data and things like Islamic State, you know, it's just very easy. They've embraced the web and it's like, no, the whole world has embraced the web, YouTube. You know, it's not like a terrorist organization has embraced it and everybody else has decided, I'm not using the internet.
So the two sides of this, when looking at it in a balanced way, as balanced as you can get, which is GCHQ, they had access to all this stuff due to, you know, vulnerabilities in security technology that they knew about. They've recently been all patched up. We found out as the royal we, as the general public, found out about all their kind of snooping practices. The companies found out that they were being hacked and snooped. They peed off a lot of people, basically, because they were going outside of remit, outside of law, and all the things that kind of spies do, I guess. But it all just became very apparent. They've now fixed all the security holes. They're working, like people, the big companies are fixing to supply what their customers want, which is privacy. And GCHQ are now finding that their data streams of where they get pointers and signals and flags are all drying up. So they're saying, we need to do something about this. The direction at the moment means that we're getting less and less information like that. Cooperate more fully with us. And Google are saying, we do cooperate fully. All you have to do is show us a warrant. The fact that it's got legal precedent and there's oversight. And GCHQ and other agencies are just not happy that they've got to operate within that framework.
No, I mean, basically they've been told you must operate in the laws that you've set out in your country. They're no different from anybody else, and they're hacked off with that. And yes. It was interesting. I mean, I work for a defence firm, and we had an award ceremony last week that was at, and this actually bubbled up in conversation, and I kind of was all like, no, it's our data, it's my data, why should anybody, but the majority of people were like, sod off, if somebody wants to look at your data, we should be able to, and I'm like, well, totally disagree.
I don't disagree with that, as long as they want to view it, and then someone actually tells them that they, you know, within remit to go and view that data.
Yeah. I mean, what was the reason that you're looking at my data? And if they believe it's because, you know, I don't know, somebody I know, there might be some, you know, might be some tenuous link or whatever, I'd kind of believe it more. But this whole, we'll grab it and it might be useful later on when you may or may not become something. No, sorry.
But it does, from these words and how strong they are, it does sound like these recent patches to SSL, patches to common sort of kernel type things that have been going on the web. It does look like they were the secret back doors that they mentioned and Snowden sort of brought to light.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, I still think there's a lot of stuff that is thrown around that people say, oh, terror. I mean, there was a, another story that kind of bubbled up last week was Sajid Javid, who is he's a culture secretary, and he's got this plan to end not spots. So this idea that there's lots of dead mobile spots around the country, but somebody will have coverage. You know, something like O2 might have coverage in an area, but the other three don't. And what he's saying is, well, I'm going to force you to roam. I'm going to force you to provide a coverage, a signal. And it's Theresa May's actually said, no, terror is an issue there, and terrorists could aid terrorists, so I'm not going to let you do this.
Wow.
And it's like, what?
Are they huddling in these these quiet areas? Wow, that's just bonkers. And say the angle that's being taken is this, well, the general public should not have privacy. All these technologies were designed for government secrecy. They were not designed for personal secrecy. Don't do it. That's the argument. It looks like it's going to kick off anyway, because they're strong words basically pointing at the technology firms, rather than, you know, blaming them when really they weren't the ones that stepped outside their remit.
No, I mean, they were using, as you've said, they were using bugs and flaws in the software. The flaws have now been fixed, and they're now getting told, use the laws that were ordered in your country. There's nothing changed.
Use the laws that you should have been using anyway.
Basically. Yeah, exactly.
Dropbox. The Dropbox partnering with Microsoft is massive. This is the closest analogy is really that this is turning Microsoft Office apps into kind of the Google app suite. Dropbox is being used to be able to share out documents, but also from within the Dropbox app, you'll be able to edit your documents. And the opposite way around is true. So there is good Dropbox integration into the apps. So you can save apps out. You can share links via Dropbox inside your Office suite. Plus the, Microsoft announcing, cheaper and free ways into using their software. So this is, in effect, the cumulative, what I've taken from this is it's turning into Google Apps, but using Microsoft Office Suite.
Yeah, pretty much. The Dropbox news on itself was big news. And then a couple of days later, Microsoft said that Office for Tablet that we've announced already, and it was paid for if you wanted to edit, they've kind of watered it down. So you can now...
you can do basic authoring and editing.
Yeah. And a lot of the time, the basic author and editing is very much like the kind of free apps you could download anyway, and do some basic editing. You know,
I still argue that you only ever really want to do basic authoring and editing on a tablet or a phone. So actually, sounds good.
Yeah, and I mean, I downloaded the apps already and had paid for just a month just to try it out, and it worked okay. You know, I was sitting on a train editing PowerPoint. Like you do, and it was fine. There were certain things that I still thought, you know, see my mouse, I think I'm probably still quicker
and easier. Yeah,
yeah. But there's in general, just being able, because you kind of forget that you've got the touch ability, and it's the same in the Surface at the moment. There's certain times I'm doing things, I'm like, idiot, use your hand.
And
you can zoom in and out and zoom around, and once you start, you know, getting into that world again, it's like really nice. So this is It's a big move for me. So I think they would have been better placed to have done this up front. It's almost like they've dipped a toe in the water and they're now realising life's quite good. Let's jump in.
But it, just all these things take time. I think that's what we forget. These are massive enterprise, you know, massive bits of software they're having to sort of fettle and get into place. They've changed, Microsoft has changed the kind of direction of the app now. So they've called it Office for iOS rather than it was very much a tablet app. But now they're actually bringing it to phones as well. So and will come across to Android tablets.
And there was I'm desperately trying to find it, and I probably won't find it in time to talk about it. And then in 2 minutes' time, I'll be like, there it is. But there was a great slide that I'd found. I'm just trying to remember the guy who did it. Benedict Evans. So he puts out like a weekly newsletter all about mobile. Mm-hmm. And it just showed like the drop in Microsoft over the last 6 years from like 80-90% usage down to about 20.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that is incredible.
And it was the cash cow. It was the thing that we always thought, well, Microsoft's never going to lose Office. But it turns out that given just a little bit of time, things turn around. It's all these, you know.
And apart from Xbox, probably, nobody spends their own money in Microsoft. So seeing you're an enterprise, yes, enterprises do spend a lot of money on Microsoft, but as a consumer, how many people are spending good hard cash with Microsoft? Not a tremendous amount.
Poor Microsoft. But no, I mean, but you know, it for everything that we've been hearing recently from Microsoft has been definitely had. You know how we went through probably 2 years of everything we heard about Microsoft was negative?
Yes.
The news that's coming out now is that the Surface actually is improving. The latest version of it is actually quite a capable bit of hardware. The operating system's coming back to normal. The next one tends due to be, you know, even better again, back to sort of their core ground. And they're releasing products and applications not just on their devices, cross device and quickly as well, with quite innovative features. So there's definitely a turnaround going on here, and I praise them for that quite highly.
Yeah, this is I found the graph. I told you after 2 minutes I'd find it. March 09, and it's the title has shifted away from Microsoft's share of personal computing device sales, and it was up around 85 to 90%, and in 5 years it's dropped to under 25%.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Which is like a massive change. You know, it's.
Andy Rubin has left Google Robotics. So he was heading up that division. He was previously working. He was the guy that actually created the Android like concept, if you like, which then got bought up by Google. He was kept on to sort of push Android. That then got taken over by Sundar Pichai, and now Ruben has decided he's going to step away from that robotics division to go and start up his own incubator. There's no announcement as to whether that is going to be under Google monetary support or whether it's going to be a completely sort of separate and independent thing. He was a well-known character within Google, so we're hearing there's been a couple of sort of shifts around. They're definitely up to stuff inside Google, right?
Yeah, and he's best known for Android, and then he went on to actually, you know, actually be involved with the robotic side of it, and that was his kind of passion. So it does feel like a big change, because they bought what, 3 or 4 companies last year. Like, was it Massive Dynamic? Is that the right name? The big kind of scary dog ones that are like.
I think you might have just said the one that was in that.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think it was. But it was something along those lines, and they still did the same kind of things.
Yeah.
What was that show? I can't even remember what it's called.
Fringe.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that was Massive Dynamic in Fringe. But anyway, it's they kind of built the same kind of things, which is, you know, mechanized things of war mostly. But anyway, yes, so big shifts around. Kind of pointing that Google are going to go far more down the...
I watched some Fringe. Oh, yeah.
going down the software route rather than the hardware route at the moment. I'm sure their robotic stuff will carry on, but it seems like it's taking a bit more of a backseat again.
Boston Dynamics was the one that Google bought.
Not far. Close. Like I say, but their actual products they were producing were just as freaky.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was one night it was called Big Dog.
Yeah.
It was the one that was like, and you just thought, if that was chasing you down...
We're going to come on and talk about games later, but I think it was Call of Duty, one of the franchises where whole episode pretty much on that kind of drone that walked around with you, and you thought, that's never going to happen. And it was like, yeah, oh, actually, it exists now.
Yeah, I think the only thing that Big Dog couldn't do was turn quickly. So yes. If you could basically just dodge out the way, but this thing was like a beast.
Yeah, well, yes, again, if it was charging you. So there you go, Ruben's off. And Google have released a new calendar app, and they've also released a new Gmail app as well. Basically available at the moment for people who are running Lollipop, should be available soon for people on 4.1 plus. But basically it's kind of taking what they took from their email client to put it into calendar. So it's sort of more contextually aware, more kind of magically completes, tells you what's going on. Offers up different views so you can have sort of to-do lists and schedule and stuff like that. And of course, it'll tell you when your aeroplane gate changes.
Yes, I did that. I had that happen last week. I sat at the airport and up popped my gate number. I was like, I'm that man.
You are now that person. I guess if you're seeing an airport, the first thing you do is sit where you can see the gates, right? I guess if it's going to pop up and tell you on your phone, you'd have to worry about that anymore, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I was in Ted Baker at Brian Shirts.
But I'm still going to take the piss because, you know.
And it went ping, and I looked and I was like, oh, gate A9.
There you go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
And this has also got the new fabric design, which also came out on
Material.
Material fabric. I am Fabric's Twitter.
Yep, you're right. It is.
I've not been sleeping the last 3-4 days, and it shows. I'm super excited and I'm tired.
So it's got the material design, which is going to be that, you know, that's what lollipops are about. So yeah, that's what's coming out. I'm hoping my phone will soon update. Hopefully I'm still within its kind of updatable cycle.
And the new Maps app has got the new material design. So that came out in iOS and Android.
There you go.
And it looks nice.
Yeah, I like the definition, how they defined their new design. I thought it looked good.
Yeah, it looks nice.
There's been another malicious software attack on Apple, specifically for users in China. It's a bug or a virus they're calling WireLurker, and effectively it sits either on your device or on your computer. You can install from sort of unverified locations, or if you install it from an unverified location, it can sit there and it can listen out for devices and then sort of spread itself like that. It didn't seem to suggest what actually it was doing once it was spreading around, but it didn't suggest what it was doing.
The payload just now is trivial and doesn't do anything. But obviously, now that they've proven the concept, there is the capacity that somebody could put it to a fairly nasty use. So lots of people term this as almost like the first serious potential malware to affect iOS, even though it did nothing. It was almost like a proof of concept. It said, you've got a hole in your overall architecture that you need to plug.
So it's good that someone noticed it then and has actually found this, because it's, you know, if there is this first wave, hopefully they've got some time to be able to try and... I think one of the biggest problems of this is that it's inside of Apple's sort of bubble of safety, you're all right, because you'd never install an unverified... You'd install from the App Store on both your laptop in your sort of Mac and your iOS device. But that... On desktop, that doesn't happen. You do install from other locations, and you don't choose the App Store to do that. So, and this will infect a device down the USB wire, basically.
There's a handful of developers have started moving away from the App Store again, just because of the restrictions that are in place, the lack of any updates, the ability to, they can't, as a developer, I can't, 3 years down the lane, develop this app and charge you again. You're kind of, that's what you've paid. And also just some of the restrictions. I've forced quite a few to actually say the benefits of iCloud aren't worth this.
I don't think that the App Store on, I'm sure there's a lot of money passing through, I'm sure, but the actual App Store on Mac hasn't made as much sense as it does on something like a tablet.
No, and also default, when I did my default Yosemite install rather than doing an upgrade, by default it blocks third-party apps.
Of course
so
it
you
does.
Go, you yeah. go to install it and it's like, you can't install this, you need to go and change the security settings.
Yeah.
Do you really want to do that?
Yeah, and it's three warnings before it'll let you do it and all those kind of things.
It's like,
yes,
I want Plex, give me it.
It's a reasonable request. I want a good app developed by good people, but this does show you that once you remove some of those settings, there are ways in, and even with a secure, environment like iOS, sometimes that secure environment gives you a false sense of security, in that once someone gets inside that environment, there are, potentially less things because,
Well, it's weird. I by default, don't think about antivirus and spyware and anything like that. It just does not enter my thoughts anymore. Whereas when I was a Windows user, it was always is this up to date? Have I got my antivirus up to date? Have I got this up to date? Have I got Windows Defender installed and all that kind of stuff? And it's
Mac's definitely penetrated enough now for it to be entirely reasonable to want to go after Mac rather than PC. And in fact, all things point to it being pretty much the only computer left in the market at some point. Samsung is kitting out West Yorkshire Police with Galaxy Note 3s. As an alternative to notepad and paper, basically.
I'm absolutely gutted.
Why?
Where was your Yorkshire accent?
Oh, yeah.
I've waited a week for this precise moment, and all I got was a Samsung.
How do you do it? Samsung. Samsung. Anyway, they apparently it's saving officers time, 18 minutes per officer, because obviously if it's in a digital form, they can actually manipulate that data easier than having to sort of, take their paper notes and put them into stuff when they get home.
You know, I like my stats. And I saw the 18 minutes, I thought, that's really good, but is that per year, a day? I just said it saves 18 minutes.
It doesn't say, does it?
18 minutes.
18 minutes over the lifetime of that officer.
Yeah. When he was in the toilet, yeah, he could still file a report, 18 minutes saved.
But having said that, you know, you can see that if they're writing, if they're going door to door taking notes, that can automatically be sent back to a central place. It could be looked at and manipulated along with everyone else making those same notes, rather than having to rely on someone coming back to office, getting distracted by a more important urgent call coming in, and then, you know, things getting delayed. So you can see how that could easily save loads of time.
Totally. Even the whole, you know, like issuing out alerts and photos and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah, how many paper notes do you think never get converted and that data never gets captured and that data may have become pertinent further down the line? So, yeah. Amazon is extending its Prime member benefits and perks. Kind of the announcement that we've got here, though, is sounds more like advertising, really. It's basically allowing other shops to advertise stuff when you do searches on Amazon. And then once you click on one of those results from these other stores, you go to the actual physical store. You go away from Amazon, but you're still required to log in using your Amazon details. But that does mean that you can now get sort of delivery, good Prime delivery on and free delivery from other shops. And so they've announced AllSaints.com, fashion retailer.
Yes. And I mean, I've used All Saints, and previously, I think if you spent over £100, you got free delivery. So now you can buy one T-shirt and get free delivery rather than having to buy two.
So Amazon doesn't get a cut of All Saints money. They just get a slight charge each time that someone clicks through and actually goes and purchases something.
Yeah, and also I think there's the All Saints content is now on Amazon's website kind of thing. So it's a bit like you said, it's like advertising. It's all a bit...
But it only comes up in the Amazon search. It's not physically shipped or stocked by Amazon.
No.
It's actually just... But yeah, you can see that. So the direction is basically Amazon want to be the place you go to type in your, you know, product purchase. And also Amazon is the login used on all these third party sites. But whether they can get buy in from other retailers is yet to be seen.
Yeah. And I've just searched on there and not a lot comes back. It's a bit strange.
They probably don't see you as their core market.
Thanks.
Right. I could never buy clothes through Amazon. Anyway.
No, I don't. Well, it's only when I've bought from a physical store and I kind of know what my sizing is, do I then...
Yes, you feel a bit more confident about doing it. Yeah. Amazon also have released Amazon Echo, which is basically Siri or Google Now, but in a kind of hardware form that's designed for use in your home. So it's like a little module that you plug in and it sits there and listens for you to ask it questions effectively. And I kind of get it. I get where they're coming from. They're kind of turning your house into the enterprise.
So I don't know. I didn't like the look of this at all.
What are your kind of reservations? Because you watch sci-fi and they always talk, you know, computer, blah, 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 blah. In fact, your keyword would have to be computer, right?
Computer, just so I could do a computer.
Yeah, exactly. Make it so.
Yeah. It was just the whole, see if it was from Apple or Google or Microsoft, I think I would be fine. There's just something a bit like, I'm selling my soul. You know, I get the feeling I'd be sitting talking about Halo and the next time I go on Amazon website
because they'll want to get something out of it, I'm sure. Yeah, it's certainly logging it.
And if you look at the other devices, they have all they've pretty much been shop fronts. Not Kindle, maybe not so much, but certainly the Fire products have been more
Kindle was really from, because it was a shop front into their books. It's just another way of playing, but
I feel Fire was even more so. It was just like a rule in your face about this is where you buy it from, and that whole Firefly nonsense, you know, overall, you know, I'll be able to, you know, hold up my phone and it'll see that, oh, you want to buy tomato ketchup from Amazon.
Yeah.
It just feels a bit of an extension to that.
So I feel that, and I feel those reservations are certainly around, like you say, Amazon, like, and you're very, very likely to get, you know, adverts based on what you've been searching for. However, the overall concept of I was thinking, my first reaction was, well, you can do it with your phone. But actually, in a household environment, having something that's just listening for you talking actually does become useful. So I can see that the concept will become, I think there will be a similar bit of hardware probably coming from Google and probably one from Apple in the end. Because, you know, why build it into your house and you can start asking anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Do a search for this is good. This is podcast gold. Go just do a search for Jibo. J-I-B-O.
What?
J-I-B-O.
J-I?
G-I.
J-I. J-I-B-O.
Now, this is a creepy robot.
Okay, so what's that doing?
So watch the little video. This is Jibo, the world's first family robot, and this is quite creepy looking.
You might have to cut this out of the podcast if this, because I'm now watching.
No, it's fine. So if you're driving the car and listening to this is it's like a, basically it's like a screen.
It moves.
And it moves and it looks like a blinking eye, and it looks really quite creepy. But also, it doesn't wait for you to just like ask a question. It's not like, Jibo, what is the weather today? At random points, it'll just say, hey, how you doing, Chris?
So it's,
and just say things like, you know, Chris, Ian's going to join you in the podcast at 7 o'clock tonight. Is that still okay? And it just looks a bit, it's like something out of like a Disney animation when you watch the video.
Yeah, he does. It's very Pixar.
Yeah. So that's,
I might watch it with sound later on and just get the full feel.
I mean, it's expensive. It's like $600.
Wow. Okay.
But if that is a sign of things to come, then
the only thing it's not doing is actually moving around. that's the next thing. If it just suddenly crept up behind you.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So it's static on a table, but it's got like these kind of, you know, flexible animated
articulations.
Joints, articulated. Yeah. That's the one. And it just looks like it's kind of turning around, looking at you, and it blinks. So it's like you say, Jibo, and it turns and stares at you like.
Wow. Okay. I'll go and watch that properly later. That's interesting.
And I won't cut that out. We'll keep that in, even though it was like 10 minutes on.
So yes, I think there's place for these things, and I think we're going to see that kind of enhanced. More hardware. Jawbone. They've launched two new activity trackers. The Upmove and the Up3. Basically, Upmove is their kind of low-end $50 region tracker. And then you've got $180. This market has kicked off as far as what people are prepared to pay, isn't it? Really have. $180 is the top end of their market. And basically, that top end of the market will continuously measure your heart rate. It will continually monitor your activity in tri-axis accelerometer. It measures your skin reaction,
respiration rate, and temperature.
So basically, it looks like an all singing, all dancing, you know, bit of kit, really. And it will automatically identify the kind of activities you're taking part in. Therefore, you don't necessarily have to log when you've started running or started jogging, whatever. It will notice that and do it for you. And it will do sleep, all the kind of, you know, deep sleep, REM sleep, all that kind of stuff. It goes underwater to 10 meters. And lasts a good week basically without through charges. So it sounds perfect. It's a compelling bit of kit, that.
It does. It sounds like a next gen Fitbit. You know, the Fitbit for me just sits in the pocket and it gives me my steps and it tracks my sleep when I stick it on at night. But this to me is like that kind of almost like the next step that I'm looking for. Yep. So yes, it'll do all the kind of steps and stuff, but see the kind of what temperature and heart. Not so heart rate's interesting for me, but temperature, because again, people might be thinking, what? I link temperature to my migraines.
Yeah.
So I would love to actually have that kind of data so that I could sit there and go, hold on, when I first noticed it, my temperature had gone up slightly, and it is something that I need to, you know, do I need to, I don't know.
You won't know until you track it.
Exactly.
And Fitbit did announce a whole ton of new products for next year as well, right? But off the top of my head, I know that they put GPS in there.
GPS is in
there. And they had the accelerometers, but I don't know whether it did all these other bits and bobs.
No, not to the same extent as this. This looks like a kind of top end. And there is, I mean, the Mafit Bit One's still going strong, yeah. but I feel within the next sort of 3 months, I can see me potentially moving. And I'm kind of loath to move from the Fitbit platform because everything's there.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of hacked off they're not supporting HealthKit or the other or the Google equivalent.
Because they've already, saying, you know, they spent their money and their kind of their proposition's already in place. But you're right, you can't rest on your laurels like that. You've got to keep tying into the latest thing.
And I mean, all the other big ones are basically saying, yeah, we will hook into HealthKit and the Google one because that's what customers are looking for. It's their data. Whereas they're saying actually, we're not convinced.
We like the way we can show you the data. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and as a design, I'd like to see. You can only see the bits of hardware. They're kind of bands, the thin bands that you've got a wrist strap, so they're one size fits all, so they're adjustable. I'd like to see them on a wrist to see how they sit. But they look, nicely designed. They're a bit stylish. But I'd like to see them in place.
I'm kind of liking the fact I could wear that, and it doesn't look too over the top. Whereas the watch still looks.
Yeah, the watches are still not sleek yet. I mean, I have to say that, you kind of want them to be as unobtrusive as possible. Don't you? You don't really want to bring attention to them at all. But
no,
anyway, I was quite excited by these. So
I can see me picking up an Up 3. I really can, if it all, works.
Yeah. And the up move is basically $50. And that is just tracking your kind of movement and storing the data like that. So it's a bit much more like a Fitbit, really.
Yes.
Yeah, good stuff. Let's just tidy up today's podcast because there's some games coming up. Not least of which the Master Collection is from Halo Master Select Collection is due out tomorrow. Ready to rock. And by all accounts, that's got some amazing reviews. The visuals that I've seen of how they've brought the old games up to date is it's worth play. It looks worth playing through again. They were always. Or mostly brilliant. Yeah, Ian can't stop smiling. They're mostly brilliant games. And the hardest thing's going to be which multiplayer do you play first? I reckon you're going to say exactly. Halo 2, right?
I think it'll be Halo 2 just because it's remastered, because it'll be like they've been redone. But then there were so many great Halo 3 maps as well.
Yeah.
And Halo 2.
And I think Halo 3 is where we probably spent most time, or I said, myself, I spent most time.
Yeah, because I don't remember you too much in Halo 2.
Didn't play Halo 2 very much at all.
Yeah, and there's some great maps here.
I still think there's going to be a bit of that, the pink haze. But anyway,
undoubtedly. But then when I played some Destiny last night and then looked at the whole broken reward system and was just like, oh.
Yeah. Now, we're all looking forward to it. It's got great reviews and it looks like it's a bit like the Orange Box. It's a no-brainer. If you've never played them before, it's an ultimate no-brainer. If you have played them before, it's still a no-brainer. Selling, it's retailing at about $39.99, something like that. So it's even a good value game for a next-gen.
I mean, considering you get the four games, and including some that I've never been in console before. So there are some like really old maps that I've never been on a console. Plus you get 3 weeks of a Halo 5 beta.
Yeah. I'd say the one thing that concerns me at the moment is how have they integrated all these things together? Is it a long loading process to come out of one edition of the game and go into the other? Because I'm sure they're all still separate modules. And how are they going to tie all that together? So I hope they've done that in a clever way. It would be nice just to be able to skip from one thing straight to another, but I bet it's going to be a bit more awkward than that.
And I did see, saw some early impressions in NeoGAF at the weekend, and it was folk that had managed to get their hands on the game early. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, doing like the hosting yourself. Now, you in Halo, you could do like your own hosting. So instead of going through the matchmaking, they were saying it was still quite laggy. There was a noticeable lag for other users compared to the guy hosting. Whereas when you do it, but matchmaking hadn't been switched on yet.
Right, so they couldn't tell on that front.
I have one of the things I've noticed about all the kind of current gen, and we noticed it towards the end of like the 360's life as well. But on first day, games just seem to break.
Yeah.
It's like they're not, it's that whole, there's that spike right at the start, and the servers are all set for the average, and the spike just means it's almost difficult day one. And we've seen it with a lot of games this year.
It's not just difficult, it's almost impossible. I have, the more I have to deal with it myself, the more you get sympathy for how impossible the task is. But having said that, they're massive companies and their reputations rely on it.
Well, look at Battlefield. I mean, Battlefield last year was broke for 6, 7, 8 months, but by all accounts now, it plays really well.
Yeah, but no, that's because no one's playing it.
Yeah. And COD. So COD came out last week to actually really good reviews.
It's been getting sort of nine point, you know, even higher than nine. So yes.
Yep. They've said they've moved the platform on, but the disappointing part is seemingly multiplayer has got some really bad netcode in it, which is like, again, disappointing. It's like, that's...
Is this a new developer? Is this the first time this new developer's taken COD?
This is Sledgehammer. You know, they've done a version of it. No, remember there was like two or three different developers and they kind of handed off each year because there's no one studio could do the continual development. So they're definitely not new to it, but I just think because there is a change of pace in this one. When you watch some of the videos, it just looks so frantic. It looks like some of the Titanfall aspects where you're dashing around and all of a sudden you've got your exoskeleton on and you're doing crazy stuff.
And that from a netcode point of view, that can't be underestimated because a lot of what you see on screen is actually predictive movement. Or predicted movement based on your kind of trajectory. But if you've got things that Titanfall introduced, so being able to, you're basically moving in 3D space now rather than just 2D. It was easy to predict where someone's going. If they're heading in a direction, they're heading towards a hill, they're going to go up that hill. Whereas now they could jump, go left, right, bounce off a wall, and that's where these predictive technologies struggle, and that's probably why they're having trouble with it. And people like Titanfall managed to solve it.
Because they're looking at some of the text around about COD, it was a whole, like, you can do some sort of double dash movement, which basically meant you could all of a sudden go in any of the axes, but you couldn't fire during it because it's such a dramatic movement.
Yeah.
And there was this, they're doing two things at once was almost too much an advantage. You know, you could just, jump out of the way, shoot somebody, and they're saying, well, something's got to give.
All these games, as soon as games put sprint in, when people were sprinting around, it's almost impossible to hit them. And that's basically because the game didn't really know where they are in relation to you.
The only thing I would say is I think back to Unreal Tournament, and that had some crazy physics in it that you could go anywhere, and that and seemed to be it. Okay.
Yeah, but they did have servers that probably were a bit underused then. CODs, that's been all been people raving about that.
So you never picked COD up, are you going to?
No, I'm not. No. It's not going to get looking. I'm playing Shadow of Mordor, the Middle-earth game, which is basically Assassin's Creed with a different skin. And it's very good. So I'm enjoying that. And with Halo, and I haven't played Horizon. just sits there doing nothing. And there's other games I want to go back to. So I think that's probably the end of my Destiny now. I think that's probably
it. I had my last game of Destiny last night.
Yeah, I don't think it's coming back out of the box again.
No.
So Assassin's Creed, they've got the new one. Like, is it Unity? I think it's called.
Which does look very nice.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the model down. I didn't play the last Assassin's Creed. I've got that game. I've played about 2 or 3 hours of it. I don't know why. It just didn't stick me in there. GTA 5's coming out PS4.
And Xbox.
So is it out now at the same time? I know that everyone's been talking about PS4.
They're both out on, is it the 18th, 19th?
Okay,
so 20th, something like that.
If you want to see it in high fidelity, go for it.
And it's also got a first-person mode for the first time.
Okay.
So you can actually, and I actually looked pretty good. I'm probably going to play it up at Christmas because I never played through fully on the 360.
If you didn't play through, I'm sure. The thing is about GTA, it's never about the graphics, really.
No.
It's again a bit like the kind of World of Warcraft thing. It was, the graphics had to be reasonable, but it was more the epic scale of things going on that were, and the fact that they got the graphics so good. It was amazing. I don't think I will be picking it up. I do look forward to the next edition though when it does come out. Far Cry 4, I haven't seen reviews, but the previews I've been looking at, they look quite interesting.
Yeah, and it's weird. Far Cry as a series, I think I got the first one and it never really clicked, but it still sells a massive amount and gets loads of good reviews, and it just bypasses me totally.
It does for me as well. I've never bought into the series. But again, when you read the reviews, it's an open world sort of... Again, it's this, the whole concept of you can go and do that bit, that bit, that bit. It doesn't really matter which ones you do and what order you do them in. They might affect the storyline very slightly, but effectively you've got a whole series of tasks to do, and it's up to you how you approach them. And then The Crew is one of the... They've been talking about it for ages, right?
It was a open worldy type racing across America. You can race across. I think it was 2 or 3 hours to go coast to coast. That was
that was their selling mantra and stuff. So yeah. And that's due out soon, I guess.
There's some betas kicking around which were mixed.
Right, okay.
But again, it just looks, it looks, is it, it's one of these things that there's potential there, and my, I bet you it gets sixes and sevens out from a review score. You can almost, now that way you can sort of peg scores on games before they come out. You know, you can kind of say that's good. That's going to be a nine. That's going to be a nine. That's probably a seven.
And I have to say, I don't really look at games now that are below nines. It takes, you know, it'd have to be something in particular genre that I really wanted to play or whatever. But for me, I don't play enough now to warrant anything other than a good game. There's no
point
wasting.
That was a surprise about Destiny. I mean, it got basically sevens, maybe eights.
But if you read the reviews, they always caveated that with, it's what it could have been is why this score isn't as high, you know, is low.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Some of them kicked it very hard. Because it was not what it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's kind of games roundup. And obviously, coming to Christmas, there'll be sort of more coming out. On the Wii U, Bayonetta came out. Is it Bayonetta 2? Yeah.
Bayonetta 2.
And that got sort of tens. That was apparently one of the best action games. It's just unfortunate that they, you know, it was previously a game for all platforms. This one is only a Wii U. It's a Wii U exclusive because Nintendo kind of picked it up when no one else wanted to, no other publisher. And Nintendo have now got it as an exclusive, and there's a lot of people crying about that because it's just not going to get played. Amazing.
Shaq actually picked up a Wii U this year and was enjoying it, but he sold it.
Yeah.
He wanted other things, needed the cash, and it was like, what will go? And ultimately, he thought PS4's got longer legs than the Wii U, even though it's got a kind of strong, you know, four or five games. It's the same four or five games that he played, you know, 5-10 years ago.
Yeah. And the only reason Nintendo are around still doing the Wii U sales is because they're strong on their own. They will
Mario,
sell a console.
Zelda, you know, Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, they've got this IP. And Bayonetta, but unfortunately just Bayonetta doesn't have that buy-in, so people don't know about it. But as a game, it got 10, so it's a shame. It's going to be one of these great games that just never gets played.
Mm.
That's the end of the podcast. If you want to find out more about what we do, what we...
No picks.
About. Have you got a pick?
Yeah, go and watch Interstellar.
Interstellar?
Yeah, so that's a Christopher Nolan movie, which again got...
You watched that, last Friday?
Yeah, I watched it in IMAX, and it was it's one of these things, it's 3 hours long, so it's quite long. Some bits that are a bit like, come on, but generally as a kind of sci-fi... kind of blockbuster event type movie. Thought it was really good. Really enjoyed it.
Good.
And it made me want to play No Man's Sky. It made me want to go on an adventure in space.
Yeah. I tell you what, having seen the, you know, firsthand the Oculus, a game like No Man's Sky on Oculus. I know Elite Dangerous is obviously there, is just doing the same kind
of thing. God damn it, I'm so annoyed. Because I found out last week that the two Oculus Rifts that were supposed to be coming to us, I've been sitting in Manchester for a while. And it's like, get up to Glasgow. Why was there two? One for my house. No, it wasn't. One for another site.
One for home.
Exactly. Because I have bought Elite Dangerous just to kind of try, just to try it with
I cannot
Oculus.
Explain to you the feeling, the weird feeling I got sitting in Elite Dangerous for the first time with an Oculus on and looking down, and you're sort of, you look down and people talk about the fake hand illusion. And it was exactly that feeling. There's a fake hand illusion where you can trick someone's brain into thinking that a rubber hand is actually their own, basically. I know.
Just some
I
sort of confession coming.
Yeah, it's not like that. And basically, it's the same effect because you're sat using a controller and a keyboard, and you look down in the game that the person sat in its cockpit is also using a controller and a keyboard. It's the weirdest. I can't explain to you. It's a weird feeling.
I do just have visions of like. Sitting on my hand for a wee while, go to sleep and then
get out. Getaway. info@digitaloutbox.com if you want to complain about Ian's childishness. Skype.
Oh, Timothy, your childishness.
Skype and Twitter are Digital Outbox. You can find out about me, my racing at academyracing.co.uk. I've lost Ian. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK. Right, child, where can we find you?
My blog is iand.net. I'm on Twitter as Sweeper. And yeah.
Cheers. We'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye. It's the child.
The child speaks.